Significant brain healing can happen within the first few months of sobriety. Finally, some good news, right? In this episode, you'll learn more about how alcohol damages the brain to make it harder to stay sober, and how the brains of people who are able to stay sober differ from those who go on to relapse. It's not just deciding that you're done with drinking and that's it. That's what we observe other people do who aren't addicted, and then we feel like we're losers with no self-control when we can't do the same. The problem is, when you drink heavily long-term, it changes your brain, and this makes it hard for the brain to function properly. And before we dig in, I'd like to say a quick thank you to my sponsors who made this episode possible. Are you tired of your digestive system feeling like a circus act gone wrong? Introducing Ritual's 3-in-1 gut superhero, Symbiotic Plus. A probiotic, prebiotic, and postbiotic all rolled into one. And with 25% off with the code POWER, there's no better time to check out Ritual. Let's break it down. Probiotics are like the cool kids at the gut party, keeping everything in check and making sure the good vibes are flowing. Prebiotics are their wingmen, fueling the party with all the right snacks to keep the good bacteria thriving. And postbiotics, well, they're like the cleanup crew, sweeping away the mess and leaving your gut feeling fresh and fabulous. So say goodbye to the gut drama, and remember, there's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/power. Tossing and turning all night like a salad? It's time to put those sleepless nights to bed for good. Enter Tenacy, my sleep saviors, and they have science to back up their sleep, anxiety, and pain-relieving powers. Back in 2016, they invested a $2.5 million grant to Middle Tennessee State University to study the hemp plant. Turns out their special patent-pending CBD-CBDA formula is twice as effective as CBD alone and can be more effective than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. So if you're tired of tossing and turning like a rotisserie chicken, then Tenacity's got your back with their range of great products from tinctures to gummies to lotions. Tenacity is my go-to when I can't sleep or I have way too much anxiety. I'm so glad that I discovered them. So go to Tenacity.com and use the code POWER to get 25% off your order. That's Tenacity.com, T-A-N-A-S-I, to get 25% off your first order with the promo code POWER. Heavy drinking makes our brain atrophy and stop working. We can't think clearly and use all of our executive functioning skills. I'm going to continue to explain this in more detail in future episodes, but one of the ways that this happens is by shrinking the brain and reducing gray matter. When your brain shrinks, it can't work as well. We aren't idiots because we keep believing that it'll be different this time. Our brains aren't working well enough for us to realize it hasn't been different the past 500 times, so why would it be different now? Plus, at that point, honestly, we've already decided to drink. We're just trying to justify the decision by saying it's going to be different. When you can't use your full brain power, it's hard to stay sober. So this makes it easier for us to flip-flop. When your brain shrinks, it means that there are fewer connections between neurons, which then changes the way that the brain communicates with itself and the body. A 2007 study from the American Academy of Neurology found that the more alcohol people drink, the lower their brain volume. They looked at MRI scans of almost 2,000 people ages 34 to 88 who were non-drinkers, former drinkers, low drinkers, which meant 1 to 7 drinks a week, moderate drinkers, which was 8 to 14 drinks a week, and high drinkers who drank more than 14 drinks a week. And before I tell you what they found, 14 drinks is not a lot. When I was trying to moderate, my goal was to drink 30 drinks a week, and I couldn't even do that. So they found that people who had more than 14 drinks per week had an average of 1.6% reduction of brain volume to skull size compared to the non-drinkers. And researchers were measuring the ratio of brain volume to skull size so that it would normalize brain volume for all participants. Brain volume decreased by about 0.25% for every increase in drinking category. So non-drinkers versus former drinkers, former versus low drinkers, etc. Alcohol reduced brain volume in women slightly more than it did in men, especially for the older women in the study. And a 2020 study published in Scientific Reports looked at 300 people between the ages of 39 and 45, and they found that even moderate drinking, which was 14 or less drinks per week, resulted in reduced brain volume. Our brains naturally shrink as we age, but starting this process earlier or accelerating the process puts a person at much higher risk for dementia. Conditions like high blood pressure and diabetes can also accelerate the process, and alcohol increases our blood pressure too. About 1 in 10 people with dementia have some type of alcohol-related brain damage. And in people with early onset dementia, so those that are younger than 65, 1 in 8 have alcohol-related brain damage. But it's estimated that the real number is much higher because there are so many people that do not get treatment for alcohol addiction or are honest about how much they're actually drinking. Neurons are long, skinny cells that connect to each other by nerve fibers, which are called dendrites. So you can think of them like the roots of the tree, and the tree itself is the neuron. So these dendrites, the roots, are the white matter of our brain, which is what alcohol damages the most. Gray matter is the parts of the brain, like the prefrontal cortex and all the neurons that it's made up of. The white matter is the connection between those parts of the brain. So dendrites that branch out from the prefrontal cortex allow it to communicate and send messages with other areas of your brain. Alcohol causes the dendrites to shrink, but this can be reversed with sobriety and they can begin to grow again and spread across the brain. So most of us will have a big boost of mental clarity around 2 months sober. So you can imagine all of those dendrites have grown and spread across your brain, allowing it to communicate with itself again. Improving the ability of the brain to communicate with itself also improves brain function, which is what we feel when we finally experience mental clarity for the first time. So you can imagine when your brain is not well connected, how that might impact your day-to-day and your ability to think things through and make a good decision. Things can get worse before they get better, though. Quitting drinking isn't going to stop alcohol-induced brain damage on the spot. And remember from my episode on withdrawal, detoxing from alcohol puts a lot of stress on the brain. Studies have found that increased brain damage in the first couple weeks of sobriety is not uncommon, but then things begin to improve. So as always, I'll reference all of the episodes you should listen to next in the show notes for you. People who go on to relapse have more severe damage and atrophy to their brain than people who are able to stay sober, especially in the prefrontal cortex, which helps us manage cravings, our stress response, and resist impulses. The extended brain reward system involves a bunch of areas of the brain, like the amygdala, prefrontal cortex, nucleus accumbens, that are all connected to each other through those neural projections that I was mentioning, the roots. This system regulates reward and aversion, sensory processing, cue reward associations and memories, mood, decision making, inhibition of a repetitive behavior, and it has been associated with relapse too. A 2009 study published in Biological Psychiatry looked at this system specifically in men with alcohol addiction who were 4 weeks sober versus healthy controls and found that in the drinkers, the volume of the reward system was significantly reduced. This study had an interesting finding. Emotions are processed in different areas of the brain, and negative emotions are processed more in the right hemisphere of the brain. This study found a lot of deficits in the reward system areas of the brain on the right side, and that could be impacting our ability to regulate negative emotions. Not being able to cope with negative emotions is a main reason that people drink. So it seems like the drinking then makes us even less able to cope by shrinking and atrophying those areas of the brain more than others. And they also found volume decreases in a very specific area of the amygdala, the area where it connects with the rest of the reward network. So again, when we quit drinking, things don't magically get better even after a month sober. It's easy to get impatient and think, you've been sober for a whole month, why aren't you feeling good yet? But remind yourself how long you drank for. That's how much alcohol-induced brain damage needs to be healed. It takes longer than a month. However, some great changes happen within the first 3 months, and that's what I'm about to explain. So a 2019 study published in Addiction Biology looked at 54 patients receiving treatment for alcohol use disorder compared to 21 light drinking controls. Average age of all these participants were in their 40s. The light drinkers drank under 60 drinks a month, which is still a lot if you drink once a week. The heavy drinkers drank more than 150 drinks a month. And this is why I love this study. I love to see hardcore drinkers enrolled in these studies because often heavy drinking is considered over 8 or 14 drinks a week. That info is great and valuable, but what if you were someone that had 8 drinks a day? So this study involved a lot of very sophisticated, complex brain scans, which took me and my scientific consultant, Mike, a while to go over. Some of the AUD group relapsed and the rest stayed sober for 3 months, so they compared the light drinkers, relapsers, and abstainers. At the first time point, 3 weeks after they quit drinking, the abstainers had more gray matter loss compared to the light drinkers, which is what I said a couple minutes ago. Things may get worse before they get better. However, at the 3 month time point, the light drinkers and the abstainers had exactly the same brains. There were no differences in brain volume loss. So all of the alcohol-induced damage has stopped and the brain is beginning to repair, and it looks just like a normal brain in terms of volume loss. The problem, though, was with the relapse group. When they looked at the brains of all the AUD people at time point one before anyone relapsed, there was a clear difference in brain volume loss in the people that went on to relapse versus the people that stayed sober. And at the 3 month time point, there was a ton of brain volume loss in the relapsers compared to both the light drinkers and the abstainers. They also looked at the connection within the extended brain reward system. So remember, this system regulates reward and aversion, sensory processing, cue reward associations and memory, mood, decision making, inhibition of repetitive behavior, and has been associated in relapse. So at the first time point, the group that went on to relapse had very different connectivity strength compared to the group that would stay sober. And remember, at this first time point, everybody was sober. So they could actually predict who went on to relapse. The light drinkers had moderately strong connectivity throughout their reward system. The group who would go on to relapse had weak to moderate connectivity in the reward system, and the group who would end up staying sober was somewhere in between. At the 3 month time point, the abstainers actually had stronger connectivity in their brains compared to the light drinkers, and the relapsers had very, very weak connectivity. The researchers concluded that it's not just the severity of volume loss in the brain that determines relapse risk. It's also how the brain is connected to the regions with volume loss. If your brain has atrophied and it's not well connected, then messages can't be sent around the brain to help you exert self-control, handle stress, and suppress a craving. But As the brain heals, these regions begin to reconnect with each other, allowing us to get that mental clarity boost and use our higher order thinking skills. This paper saw a great improvement at 3 months, but I'm wondering if they did monthly time points, if they would have seen this improvement much earlier too. So if you're in early sobriety, then please try to imagine your brain healing and reaching out to form connections with itself so that you can use your full brain power to stay sober and be the person that you want to be. It doesn't happen instantly, but there's a ton of improvement within 3 months as long as you don't drink. Relapsers seem to have more alcohol-induced brain damage, which prevents them from being able to stay sober. Their brains just don't work as well. This study found that only the relapsers had gray matter losses outside of the reward system too. So this could mean that they had brain volume and connectivity losses in areas that maybe helped them manage emotional stress and anxiety, which makes it easier to drink. Neurons have to receive information from other parts of the brain to function correctly. If your brain can't send these signals well, then your thoughts of, I'm not going to drink today, or I should stop after one, don't have anywhere to go. Or when you experience a negative emotion, your brain can't put the brakes on it and self-regulate. So the emotion escalates and drives you to want to escape with alcohol. Your prefrontal cortex, which helps you control impulses and self-regulate, needs to be connected to the other areas of the brain in order to exert control over them. So this could be why, even though we know we don't want to drink anymore, we just keep doing it. Our rational part of the brain doesn't have an impact over the reward center. I'm imagining watching a reality show of people embarrassing themselves, and I'm screaming at the TV, telling them to please just stop and go to bed. But my words have no impact on them. It's like we put our prefrontal cortex behind a wall of glass, and it's screaming at us to just please stop, but we can't hear it. This is why in or outpatient treatment can be very helpful for people that cannot stay sober on their own. You're in treatment long enough for some major healing to take place, so by the time you leave treatment, your brain is more connected and functional. And this doesn't mean once our brain reconnects and heals that we're good to go. We also have to learn coping skills and build an environment that's less triggering. And healing takes years. A lot of it happens in the first 3 months, but you will continue to heal for years. So I'm trying something new. Some of you guys have been requesting longer episodes or more information. So I am making this new private podcast called Sober Powered Skills. It'll just be extended episodes. My regular ones won't be changed in any way. But if you're interested in learning about 8 lifestyle habits for maximum health and longevity, then go to soberpowered.com/skills and grab the private podcast. It's only $5 a month, and it really, really supports the show and helps me give my team more hours so they can help me more with the research and production. So that's soberpowered.com/skills. And if that's not for you, then I will talk to you in the next one.
Addiction impacts all of us. Addiction's consequences run through all of us. From ourselves to our loved ones and through our communities, addiction creates so much loss and grief. My name is Dwayne Osterlin, and I'm the host of the Addicted Mind podcast, a show featuring personal stories, expert guests, and vital information about addiction and addiction recovery. We'll talk with leading treatment providers to discuss the latest research and treatment options for this devastating disease and advocate for mental health awareness. We discuss topics like the importance of creating a community of support to helping loved ones to some of the latest research on psychedelic medicines. The Addicted Mind podcast has been about creating hope, listening to stories of many amazing people that have overcome addiction and are thriving. If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, subscribe to the Addicted Mind podcast wherever you get your podcasts or check out theaddictedmind.com. New episodes every Monday. See you there.